This podcast was recorded on the lands of the Boonwurrung people of the Kulin Nation, the land on which we're lucky enough to raise our sons and daughters. Always was and always will be Aboriginal land.
Hey, before we get into today's episode, just a quick reminder that if you have someone that is currently pregnant and thinking about all the things that are ahead of them, from postpartum planning to breastfeeding and returning to paid work, to how on earth to navigate the childcare system and what they need to do now, we have just the guides for them. You can shop our Ready or Not go-to guides, Postpartum and Return to Work Planning, Breastfeeding and Returning to Work, and Childcare 101 for $69 as a bundle or $29 individually. They're packed full of information created with experts, and I personally think they're brilliant. You can shop them now in our show notes or readyornot.au. And I know times are tough, so here's a discount. Use Ready10 to get 10% off at the checkout. Hello and welcome to Witching Hour, the show that looks at what's exciting, delighting, intriguing and frustrating us when it comes to making work, work. I'm Lou.
And I'm Loz. I have so many good news stories today, which is, I mean, in comparison to last week when my meditation failed, I feel like this is good. We're off to a good start. Good news. This happened a couple of weeks back, but for those of you who aren't in the food and restaurant scene, I wanted to call out Gourmet Traveller for an excellent decision by the people that work there. They decided this year not to recommend a very well-known restaurant in Sydney called Hubert. I've been, it was delicious, but I will never, ever attend again due to the following reason. They have had not one, but numerous complaints over a number of years around sexual misconduct amongst their employees, to which management has never, ever done anything about it. So Gourmet Traveller decided to, and they didn't include the restaurant in their top restaurant recommendations this year. Kudos to you. Because if management isn't calling it out, someone needs to. So I just think it's so well done.
That's incredible. I have been thinking a lot about Brad Pitt lately because he has been abusive to Ange.
What's this got to do with you?
Oh, a lot. And he's been photographed around, is it Venice? Are they in Venice for something? I don't even know where they are. But anyway, Ange is there. Brad's there. George Clooney is there. Brad is a bit of a slime ball, as we know. Apparently he's been abusive.
Still a babe, Lou. I'm sorry. He's still so goddamn gorgeous.
I know he's good looking, but serious.
I mean, he's definitely a whore pass.
Oh, he's hot. Sorry. He's hot.
Yeah, he's hot.
But George Clooney still walks around with him like he's done nothing wrong. And that's what Gourmet Traveller would have been like had they recommended the restaurant. And I always look at these people that let men get away with things and think, actually comfortable putting your name to him. So good on you, Gourmet Traveller, for not being George Clooney. George Clooney, by the way, is the absolute love of my life when it comes to looks. Still at his age now, I would bed with him.
Go there. You would bed with him. Oh, girl. Another good news story, and this is, I'm so excited about this. Did you know that if you are on a windy walk, if you have whining children, if there is a heap of background noise on your iPhone, assuming you're an iPhone user, when you answer a call, if you swipe up and then down from the right to the left-hand corner, there's that little microphone button. And if you click on it, the second option is to remove background noise.
Wow.
Did you know that?
We could almost record our podcast via the phone, Lozzie. Just call each other up and reduce the background noise.
Did that not just blow your mind that I said that?
That blows my mind, but I must admit, all I can think about is how annoying it was when you didn't have an iPhone and we had the group chat going with the Green family. Oh. And I'll never let you live it down.
Yeah, and because do you remember that?
Go green messages and we could never have a blue message conversation.
No, and do you remember Nan messaged and said, are you overseas? I'm like, nah, mate, I'm here.
No.
That was Margie. The worst mistake of my life.
It was terrible. No one let you live that down.
No, I didn't. I hated myself for it. It was awful. iPhone
all the
way.
Ashamed. Is that the end of your good news? Because I have a question for you.
Oh, tell me. What is the good news? Yes. That was
you
the end.
You recently went away without your kids to Bali.
Oh, yes. That's also
husband.
Good news.
Mm. I want to know all about it. From what made you go, we need this trip? Like, was there anything that was ruminating in your head? Then I want to know about actually booking in and how you decided how long to go for, what the planning was like in terms of who looked after your kids,
and what it did for your relationship. And then I think I have a good news story on our relationship after that, actually. Don't let me forget.
Oh, God. Okay. This is going to take – this is quite a big good news segment.
This is almost
actually,
this a segment, then. I'm sorry.
Yeah, whoa. So around 6 weeks ago, and I'm going to preface this by saying it, I love traveling. I actually thrive off booking travel.
If people have listened so far, they know.
They know.
Love travel,
they know.
Darling.
Yeah, I love travel. And also, like, if anybody ever wants traveling with a baby tips, I've done it since both of my children were 6 weeks old by myself, solo.
Oh, do you remember when I was on that work trip and so was Ryan in Brisbane and I met you at the Callow with Sienna when you were on mat leave?
Exactly. And I don't think, like, people get so worked up about it, but I mean, I'm happy to do a tips and tricks segment on this entire thing of travel with kids because I love it. And, you know, planes are just the public transport of the air. Yeah. So once you get your wrap your head around that, like, the rest is easy. Anyway, 6 weeks ago, I felt quite burnt out. I have been getting shocking PMS. I don't know what's going on with my body, actually, since having my second child. Please, listeners, if this has happened to you, it's like my hormones have recently gone whack. I don't even know what's going
on.
So
nearly at 2 years postpartum, you've noticed a shift.
Yeah, it's crazy.
Again. Oh, dear.
I've never had it after Sienna. I've noticed it recently. I'm going to go to a naturopath on that because it's unbearable, my rage. And I've had a really busy work schedule. Ryan has been really busy. And I thought, we are just snapping each other. I feel like we're on different levels. I feel like we need a trip somewhere for a couple of nights. Obviously, messaged my family to see if they could look after my children. And I decided after some investigation that Bali was equally as cheap as going to Queensland. So I got flights off points with Jetstar or through Qantas. And I booked a wellness retreat because I didn't want alcohol fueling any aggression or tears. You know how sometimes you get quite emotional?
Because you were a bit tense before you left, were you? Is that what you mean?
Yes.
Like you thought you were going to be having convos about like, look, we need to clear some air.
Yeah. And so I thought, you know what, I'll book a wellness retreat. I feel like I need it anyway. Like I actually do think I need to relax. So we went to Canggu for 2 nights, which was great. And we did all the drinking and eating and, you know, relaxing and massages cheaply, et cetera. Then I booked 3 nights at a wellness retreat where there was no booze. It was a predominant vegan menu. And there was just a lot of time to yourself. And I came back and I actually felt rejuvenated.
That's the tricky thing because sometimes I'll have a wine as like a fun thing to do, but then I feel shit the next day and I'm like, I actually need to rest, like actually rest, not like be away from my children and get drunk rest, like rest.
And that's what it was about for me. So everyone's like, oh, 3 nights. Like, did it make a big difference? Yes, it made a huge difference.
That's like 90 nights in a mum's life.
Huge. Like I still got up every day at 6:37, but I had an uninterrupted night of sleep. Like Sienna's nearly 4 and she still potters into our room every night. Zave occasionally wakes. So I read 4 books. I listened to 2 audiobooks on double speed, of course.
What did you listen to and read just quickly? Let's get your books that you loved.
Oh my God, so many things. Okay. I didn't love all of them, but I'll tell you what I did read. Let me have a look. So I read Alone in Alaska, the book.
Okay. That's where you want to go next on your own.
5 out of 5. Oh, yeah, I do. That's definitely on my hit list. But it wasn't about Alaska. I mean, it was, but it was more about the family story behind it. That was unbelievable. 5 out of 5, 10 out of 10. Loved it. I re-listened to Atomic Habits.
Oh, I need to listen to that.
I've actually read that a million times, but I thought, no, I feel like this is a good time to reset and think about the habits that I'm instilling in my life at the moment. I listened to Raising Good Humans, which I thought was excellent. I read a book called 10 Things I Wish You Knew About Your Child's Mental Health.
Wow. Lossie, this is really like self-help, like retreat vibes.
I know, I'm a freak. I actually also listened to Hanging by a Thread by Erin Deering.
What was that like?
I loved it. Okay. I really liked it. A very smart businesswoman and she had a lot to mentally deal with and I thought it was so well narrated. And the other book that I'm like 3/4 of the way through, but I almost can't finish it because to the disgust of probably many, I find it the most bizarre, confusing.
I know what you're going to say. Awful.
Unrelatable book. Yeah.
It is so funny.
The worst book I've ever read.
Are you not
almost
laughing though? Like she's very funny. She's so funny.
I'm torturing myself every day I pick up that book to read it. I'm like, I don't understand the storyline. Yeah. There's a million different conversations going on. I'm confused and I mean, the writing's great, but it's like, why am I I just want to finish it to get it done.
It is so kooky. I like it, but I get what you're saying. But I'm only liking it because I'm laughing as I'm reading. I'm like, your brain works so weirdly and it's hilarious.
It's so weird. The motel thing, I was like, I don't understand. Is she a stalker? Is she stalking the husband? I couldn't figure it out. I mean, she's not. But anyway, those are the things I listen to, read. I also listen to like so many podcasts. It's sickening. I came back just feeling like myself.
Yeah. What about the relationship stuff?
Oh, it was great. We had such good conversations just about like mental load, what's on each of our plates, our finances, like what our career aspirations are, stresses at work, stresses in life, future planning. And I know those things sound like so dull.
They do not sound dull to me. They're important. Otherwise, you're just at each other all the time. Could you understand each other's side more of how you were feeling before the trip versus once you sort of explained, well, I'm carrying way more of the load at home, X, Y, Z. And he's like, I get it a bit more. And here's the stresses that I'm feeling at work, X, Y, Z. Like, did you feel like you came somewhere together?
Yes, but I'll say, I think the way that I delivered and probably the way that Ryan delivered the conversation to was in a relaxed environment. Yeah. Like, you're not on high alert. You're not at each other because you're in a different setting.
Yeah. And you're not making a cheese sandwich and then putting on a load of laundry and then trying to respond to an email and then a kid nagging you at your feet. It's so different. Everyone actually deserves that space. And on that, Lozzie, so Posey's now about 8 months old. And I said to Hayden last night two things. Firstly, I said, I think we're out, not totally, but of that first really hard part, like of having two under two and feeling like just overwhelmingly in the thick of it. I feel like Posey's just getting that little bit older, that little bit easier. I put her in a high chair now and I can give her some food that she doesn't necessarily eat it, but she plays with it for like up to an hour. She doesn't need to be on me the whole time. Maybe not quite an hour, but before that it was just cry, cry, cry every time I put her down, can't get anything done, feeling the stress every which way. But I feel like we're getting somewhere. And then I also said to Hayden, I think we're becoming better friends again, because as much as we've still been great mates and, you know, each other's soulmate and all that gorgeous stuff, but it's definitely been harder having two kids to be on the same page, to be kind to each other. And I think we're really getting to a new phase with that. And I'm not saying that it's not going to peak and trough a million times, but for anyone that had two kids under two or just two kids, I don't think it necessarily needs to be two under two. I really do feel like that first level of weight has lifted at least for now. And my God, it feels good.
Yeah, exactly.
I will add to that, I've been getting babysitters for like 3 hour increments. And also I went to work yesterday and Hades looked after Posey, and those little things give me the space to not just feel constantly angry and constantly like I've got a baby attached to me. So I think that helps heaps. And honestly, the only way I've been able to really justify the cost is that we sold our house and we bought a much cheaper one. So we have lessened our financial burden so much. So for anyone feeling a bit in the thick of it with two young kids, obviously there's going to be some times where I laugh at this, but at the moment it's feeling just that little bit easier and like we're mates again. And my God, it feels good. I have one more piece for the top of this show for you, Lozzie, and that is after going so strong with my Pilates, I am about to cancel my membership because I'm just not going and I just need a break and to accept that at the moment work and parenting is triumphing and it's just walking for me at the moment. So after bragging doing 4 or 6 classes a week, that membership is cancelled.
One less thing to pay for, my friend. It'll come back when you need it.
It'll come back.
Commit to the times. Exactly.
So that was pretty much a whole segment in and of itself. But today, what are we talking about? We released an episode last week that had 4 career and motherhood conundrums that were submitted to us by our listeners. That's brought on a few more. We're going to go through one today. And then I was inspired by Jane Fonda. She was really candid last year on a podcast episode with Julia Louis-Dreyfus. She admitted to, at the age of 85, not thinking she was a very good parent in her earlier days of parenting. And I thought that was a pretty profound thing to hear someone as amazing and that we put up on a pedestal as much as Jane Fonda. She's an incredible activist, an incredible actor, someone that I really look up to and admire. And I thought, wow, that's pretty amazing. And it got me to thinking the ways in which I'm not the parent that I thought I would be. And I wanted to chat about that with you, about the ways that maybe you almost feel like, I don't want to use the word fail, but the ways in which you haven't shown up as a parent that you thought you would. And then I've also asked our community that same question. Take it away, my friend. Actually, I'll take it away, my friend.
You take it away.
Because I have the screenshot of our career conundrum. And this one is really pertinent for us. So this person says, I quit my corporate job last year to pursue something I am so much more passionate about. I was so excited to close the door on the corporate world and never look back after feeling unfulfilled and overwhelmed with the motherhood juggle post-maternity leave. But I'm now 8 months into starting my own business and it is so much harder than I anticipated. So much so that I'm now about to sign a 6-month contract of 3 days a week work back in a similar corporate role to help bring some cash into our household. I have so many mixed feelings about doing it. Am I a failure? Am I not cut out for being a small business owner? Am I just not good enough to do what I want to do? On the other hand, trying to look at this as a positive, I can still work on my biz and use the time to really build a name for myself and probably use some of the extra funds I'll be making to put back into the business too. Also very fortunate to have a skill set I can fall back on even though I want out. I couldn't relate to this more because I still freelance a lot. You're still working heaps. And I think both of us wish that Ready or Not, Witching Hour, the go-to guides we've made, the sponsorships that we have on this podcast, that they could afford us the luxury of not doing any other work. So I want to know, Lozzie, how would you speak to this person if it was your best friend coming to you saying, I'm a bit embarrassed. I feel like a failure. This isn't what I planned to do. What would you say to them?
I understand how you feel, and it's okay to feel like that. Even though you feel like that, it doesn't necessarily mean that's true. I think the realities are, particularly in my case, when you have children, you have this innate sense of drive to want to do more or to want to do things that like are going to allow you flexibility, allow you to spend time with your kids, set an example for your kids. And often that comes back to what can I start? What business can I do? What product could I make? I've heard this from so many women. It's like you get this real creative surge.
Yeah.
But what I think is lacking is you see all of this stuff on Instagram and TikTok about like, 3 times sold out. I started this overnight, like from my pantry. And it, you know, I've got $1 million or I've got so much flexibility, but it's all highlights reels. And I don't think there's actually enough conversation around how difficult and how much work and time and hours that really are not conducive to the first couple of months of motherhood.
Yeah.
Like it's just not, you're not getting sleep.
The first that couple of years. That baby's clung
to you 100% goes into starting a small business, it is so much hard work. And just because you haven't created enough funds to self-sustain you for the first like 6 months, 1 year, doesn't mean it's a failure. Most businesses do not make money for like the first 5 years.
Yeah.
Very few do.
It's interesting. How do you keep going? If we think about our own example, we started podcasting together about a year ago. Before that, I wouldn't even have considered Ready or Not a business. It's just not how I was approaching it. So let's say we started podcasting about a year ago. We probably got a little bit more serious about 3 months into sort of thinking of it as a business. Then we released our go-to guides only this April. I have flat moments all the time. Being like, why haven't you made enough money yet, you loser? How can you be asking Hayden to look after the kids while you work on something that's not bringing in enough money? I have all these moments of terrible self-talk and then I pull myself out of it because I believe so much in what we're doing, but it does sometimes eat away at me. Like, you haven't done well enough. Your friends probably think you're a loser that you're doing this thing and putting time into this thing that obviously isn't paying you a full-time wage. And it does really weigh you down and make you feel like a bit of a failure. How do you pull yourself out of those feelings? Do you indulge them as much as I do first, or do you not give yourself as much sort of negative talk as I do because you're probably not quite as much of an overthinker as I am? And when I say quite as much, I think you're not nearly as much of an overthinker.
I am not an overthinker, which sometimes lands me in trouble, but I think to myself, sometimes as a society, we place so much pressure on like what other people think and how we should be performing and what we're doing. And at the end of the day, like no one cares, as in no one is going to care if it's taking you a year to make profit except for you, or if it's taking you 5 years. As long as you feel like you're on the right track, you enjoy what you're doing. And if you have to supplement that and subsidize it by working as a contractor or going back into corporate land and thinking, you know what, okay, this is going to set me back a bit. We need money. Like at the end of the day, we have to live. I need to do freelance work, but that may mean it may push out my strategy or my goals by a year. That's okay. The only person really that is putting that pressure on you is you. And it's all right for it to take longer. It's all right for you to test and learn. Like Luce and I have failed on so many avenues, and I look at them as opportunities to try something different or to grow. Is what it is.
So what would you say to this person about, I guess, finding a balance? Because at the end of the day, there's almost three parts to this to me. There's that you're a parent and there are things that come with that that totally change your life and your sets of responsibilities. There's money, which obviously feeds into the fact that you're a parent and that you now Absolutely. Have to feed this other person. And then there's fulfilling your passions, which obviously this business that she started is more that avenue of passion filling. So how do you go about trying to find balance and also reconcile the different things you're working on top of parenting and how they all work together?
I think you said it perfectly the other day. Like I look at it like different boxes, like what fills my cup from a passion perspective and how much time do I allocate to that? What fills my cup from a work perspective? What do I need to do financially to make sure that the wheels are running? Like that's super important. I know that everyone's like, oh, do what you love. Completely agree. But what I love would be like going on an endless European summer holiday every year. Yeah. But sadly, like I'm not married to a billionaire and we can't afford that. So I think you need to be realistic.
Hey, you're not the billionaire, darling. You ain't the billionaire.
Yeah, you're right. I'm not the billionaire.
How am I? I'm like building you up and knocking you down because I'm also telling you that you're not the billionaire.
You're right. But I could be. I just got to
You could be.
Put my foot to the pedal. But I think it's normal to have those feelings of self-doubt. And I also think as women, we place so much pressure on ourselves to see instant success.
And to use our time really wisely.
Yeah. Whatever it might look like to you, it takes time. Like these overnight stories are usually not overnight. They're like years in the making. You've just started your business. Like how long did she say she was in? Like a year
Six
in?
6 months. Yeah. Yeah.
Girl, you got a long way to go. Like congratulate yourself for doing the paperwork to even start it. Like that is a fucking nightmare.
Yeah.
Good on you for getting it off the ground. You've probably had to do social content, which can be such a pain. You've probably had to put yourself out there, which is already out of most people's comfort zones. Look at all the achievements that you've had and be proud of yourself for that. And then set a clear strategy about what you want the next 5 years. It doesn't have to be about what you want the next 2 months. Go easy on yourself.
And not that we're necessarily saying that your business is all about making heaps of money and becoming extremely successful, but I would also say, refer back to the stories about these really successful people that started out having absolutely no success, that failed in prior businesses before they eventually got to their thing. Again, this might be really different to your example. We're not saying that you're going out and trying to say like be like a Spanx level of wealth or success, but go and read those stories about those people that were door knocking before they sold and made these products and made a lot of money and whatnot, or, you know, had this idea of success. And remember that, as Loz says, you are probably in the majority, not the minority here.
Absolutely. And it's not a failure. It's a pivot. Like you're pivoting because things aren't happening as quickly as you like. You need income. You've got a part-time job to support that. I think that's great. Like you're taking the initiative to do it. Pat yourself on the back, pour yourself a cup of tea, take a deep breath and be like, fucking hell, I've achieved a lot. Because you have.
That's beautiful. One person DM'd me saying Loz is the best hype girl and we all need a Loz in our corner. And I couldn't agree more. About a year and a half ago, Jane Fonda featured on Wiser Than Me with Julia Louis-Dreyfus. And as an 85-year-old at the time, so she must be 86 or 87 now, she admitted something pretty profound. Isn't that incredible that she's nearing her 90s?
It's so bizarre how you look at age and classify things as old. And then you're so surprised when you've got something in your mind and someone says their age and it doesn't meet your expectations.
It's funny that you say that because she said that her dad died at 75 or 76 and how as an 85-year-old at the time of this interview, she's way younger than he was at that age. So it's actually amazing that you bring that up because that's exactly what she was saying. So on this episode, she admitted something that, as I mentioned, I found pretty profound because I look up to her for so many reasons. And, you know, she's a pinup woman. She's beautiful. She's intelligent. She's charismatic. She's all these things that we think of as an aspirational type of person. And yet she said that she wasn't a very good parent in her earlier days.
What are the regrets that you've worked through yourself? I mean, it sounds like you've forgiven yourself, which is great.
There's a few things that I haven't forgiven myself for and that I can't really work. I was not a very good parent. What can I say? Mm. And I talk to my kids about it, or I try to.
Yeah.
And I try to understand why I did the things that I did. And I try to show up for them now in ways that I didn't back then. So that's the main way that I deal with regret.
Fonda is a mum to two daughters, both in their 50s, and a son who would actually also be now in his 50s, I believe. I think at the time he was 49. And I've since read a few more articles, looked at a few more YouTubes, deep dived Fonda's thoughts on her parenting a little bit more. And she basically has a similar sentiment. She said on another show, "I was not the kind of mother that I wished that I had been to my children. I have great, great children. Talented, smart, and I just didn't know how to do it." She also mentions that she became a real activist then, and because she could afford to leave her kids at home, she would. She says how someone that couldn't have afforded that would have taken their kids with them, and she talks about some sort of regret with that, that because she had the freedom, she's not necessarily sure that was always the right decision. She was obviously also a very successful actor, which must have taken up so much time. So you can imagine the lack of presence that sometimes may have been a very big part of her life. It's interesting on the outside because we just admire people like this. How did she do it all? How did she do it all? But maybe if you were the child, you'd say, well, she fucking did it all by not being there for me very much.
Yeah.
And her daughters have said that to her. They've said, you weren't that good a parent back in the day. And she's made up for it later in life. What it got me thinking about, and we've talked about this before, I grew up a very maternal person, and I think I expected a little bit more from myself in how that would show up into motherhood for me. I think I expected myself to be a little bit more present, to not want to do paid work after kids. That was a genuine concern for me. I loved my career before, and I worried that I wouldn't love it in the same way afterwards, which did not happen for me. And I thought I would be a little bit better with the activities, with the homemaking stuff, with cooking really good food for my kids. And I'm just not. They're the ways in which I haven't showed up. I'll give you an example. Two of my friends, they're really great at, firstly, cooking their kids really good food. Secondly, they're great with activities. They'll be like, oh, we went to the pool or we went to swimming lessons. Ray's 2.5 now. And I've taken him to the pool once and I've never thought to enroll him in swimming lessons. And I know we talk about fuck mum guilt, but I genuinely felt like a piece of shit when I realized that.
No, it's a hard no. Don't enroll them until they're 3 and you don't have to get in the pool.
This is a swimming segment now.
3 is the age to enroll your kids in swimming lessons where you don't get splashed in the face and you are on the sidelines. Well done. Good kicking, you know, whatever. Good bubble blowing. Fuck that. He's too little.
Thank you. Okay, I'll wait till he's 3. But what I want to know from you, I'm actually going to frame this differently for you because the interesting thing about you and me is as teenagers and 20-year-olds, you wouldn't have thought of yourself as a quote-unquote maternal person. You weren't obsessed with babies. You weren't thinking about babies the way that I was. So I want to know, when you became a mum, were there any ways that you became a different parent to what you expected yourself to be like?
I don't think I had huge expectations of myself. So I actually think I've gone the opposite. And like part of me thinks to myself, which is so bizarre to admit, but part of me thinks to myself, I don't know if I'll ever be done having children. Like I love being a mom and I love having kids and I love having that family dynamic. I absolutely thrive off it, which is so bizarre because if you met me in the street, you'd be like, how can Loz want like 50 kids? Like she just doesn't seem that way inclined.
It's funny because I wouldn't say that you don't seem that way inclined. I just know from knowing you for like 15 years now that you weren't like desperate and you weren't thinking like
never.
As soon as the clock turns 30 years old, I'm falling pregnant the way that I do. I must admit too, I don't give much airtime to these things that I'm talking about. I think for the most part, I'm like, oh, I do a great job. I do the best I can, whatever. I don't overthink it. But the way Jane Fonda framed that did make me think about the ways that I expected me to be as a mum, and I'm just not that type of person. And I can forgive myself for the most part. But I think there's something in whether you thought of yourself as a mum much in your 20s. Like, I think because you didn't waste much time thinking about it, you're like, I'm doing a great job. I don't need to think about it that much. I'll just do it.
I mean, I think things that actually make me more concerned is the type of mother I am later in life. This sounds so bizarre. This is such a tangent. But for me, I look at like our Auntie Shell or your mother-in-law, for example, and what I love the most is that people gravitate towards her because she'll put on a spread and be like, come whenever you please. And
she's
I always think to myself, like
a welcomer.
What? Yeah. And I'm like, what could I do in my wheelhouse that's going to leave an impression like that on my children? Because I don't cook. I'm a terrible cook, in fact. I mean, my kids constantly complain about how revolting my cooking is. I love entertaining, but entertaining is normally like outsourced. And I just don't feel like it's like a, you know, a thing that people would come to me for, like, oh, Loz, like, let's go to her house where she outsources everything. Like, not really home either. Like, I wonder what that thing will be for me. Does that make sense?
I know what you mean. It's because Michelle is such a homely person and potentially to her detriment at times. She's too much of a giver. Like, I wish that woman would receive instead of giving all the time. But I know what you mean in that it creates this warm and cozy house that you always feel comfortable walking into, and you know that you are always welcome there. It is unconditional that she wants you there.
Yes, like this is what kind of perplexes me the most around me as a mum.
This is really funny, Loz, because I know we've spoken before about how you want to be that house that's always open and the kids are always there. And I was thinking just the other day, I want to ask Lozzie a question about how she feels about aging in that regard. So this morning I went to a coffee shop and there was this gorgeous great grandma, probably about Margaret's age. So my grandmother-in-law, if that's a phrase, and your grandmother. Yes. Probably about Margaret's age. She had to be in her 90s. She was waiting for the arrival of another great grandchild. And the barista was so kind to her and made her feel really relevant and welcome and interesting, which I think is something that aging people really struggle with, that they're sort of irrelevant and all of those sorts of things. And I thought I really want to bring a question to you one day about how you feel about the fear of becoming less needed.
That would be my greatest fear. My deepest, darkest fear would be being alone later in life. I think that's why, like, I have lots of friendship groups. I innately love making friends with new people. I love being called upon for advice or help, or can you pick up my child? Yes, I'll do it. Like, I actually thrive off it, because the thought of having myself and solitude when I'm older in life is terrifying. Like, I would just consistently clean.
Yeah, I feel the same way. Like, I think based on like things to do with climate issues and also money and all of that, I don't think I can have a third child. I just don't think my brain will let me. But I do want one in the sense of I want that busy household.
To revisit this.
I don't think I will. I'm too scared
of climate change. If my body allowed, I'd have 50.
Yeah. See, no, I think my heart wants four, because I grew up with as one of four and so did Hayden. And we had so much life in our houses. And as a result, my parents still have so much life around them. But A, it's so expensive. B, I'm really worried about the planet. But I know what you mean, because I now worry if I only have two kids, that means my house won't be as busy as I age. And that is something that I worry about too. So that's more where your worry lies in terms of like being the mum that your kids still want to come back to when they're older.
Yes. Yes. But it's a constant, like, obviously, like, I know that Jane Fonda has reflected upon her life, but like this reflection for me happens daily. Like, I want to figure out a way to like grow and evolve and develop in a non-materialistic way. Like, I don't want my kids being like, oh, my mum buys me this. Firstly, I don't. Secondly, I don't know what that's going to look like for me. Like, I keep thinking, like, is it a house with a pool? Like, do I need
if I have a good backyard, will they come? Yes. That is so funny. I know exactly what you mean. And I feel the exact same way.
But I don't know what it is. Like, maybe it's just being like, I don't want to be a friend to my kids either. I really don't want that because I've seen it and I hated it growing up. Like, I always looked at those mums that were like besties with their kids and I thought,
like, too much. You want to be friends with them, but not like entrenched, like making yourself in their lives too much. Yeah, I totally
But I also want people to feel like I'm that warm personality that they can come to. I just don't know how to create that. It keeps me up. I genuinely don't. I don't. Yeah. So there you go. That's my conundrum. What about yourself, Lou?
I love that. I think you've articulated that so beautifully. I think it's really just for me, those things of like, honestly, cooking and feeling always on schedule with things like vaccinations or whatever the kids need.
Oh, yeah.
And then also probably just wanting to work more than I thought I would and not thinking, I don't think about Ray when he's at daycare. And for the most part, that doesn't bother me. Like, I don't care, whatever. But I'm surprised by that. Like, I don't miss him when he's at daycare. I love him and I cannot wait to see him when he gets home. But I'm thinking about myself during the day. I guess, and I'm proud of this, actually. I'm going to reframe this. The thing that surprises me most is that I've kept a little bit more of my selfishness than I thought I would. And it doesn't mean that I don't give my kids everything, but I'm more of my own person. I haven't lost myself in motherhood as much as I thought I would. And I'm going to frame that as a positive instead of a negative. But we do sometimes have these moments of feeling guilty about ways in which other mums might be better than us, quote unquote better, because we're all just different types of good. I think this person worded it really well in my DMs. I talked about how I just didn't think I was as good with playing and with cooking and all of those things. And this person said,
are any of us?
Exactly. I mean, some people really are. And you go to the house and you're like, fuck, this is like, you're a mum with a capital M. I'm not a mum with a capital M. So this person says, and I think this is really beautifully worded, I think this happens when we hold internalized beliefs that care work is natural and easy. Activities and food prep and all the things actually take time to develop as a skill. It's thinking that this stuff is just fun and easy, which for most people it's not. They actually have to make an effort to schedule it in and plan it until it does become easier. Once we recognize how different types of skill and intelligence are required as caregivers, we realize that even though we might have been very good at school or super successful in our careers, when we become a parent, we essentially start from scratch. I thought that was a very, very interesting way to frame it. I then asked people what their versions of not being the mum that they thought they'd be or feeling like they had shortcomings in areas were. Most people either mentioned not being able to play in the way they thought they would, being called mum 500 times a day, thinking that would be cute one day when you had your own little kid calling you mum and then being like, it's actually so annoying, I can't handle it, like you're making me mad. One of my friends brought that up actually in our mother's group chat the other day and was like, I just keep losing it at him when he yells at me all day and I feel so bad, but fucking hell, can he stop yelling mum? So we totally relate to that one. Another big one was breastfeeding and how much of a failure that made people feel like.
Oh, actually,
a really big
one. Yes.
Would you say that that was one of your feelings of failure as a mum in the early days?
Absolutely. Failure, frustration, irritation. It was a real head fuck for me, to be honest.
Yeah. So that one came up plenty of times. And I love this last one. Oh, people mentioned the food prep thing too and not being the home cook that they thought they'd be. And then this is a really great one from my friend Emily Dornbush, who was recently on the podcast and who owns Imeldo. She said that as a creative and a crafty type of mum, she thought that she'd love doing crafts with her kids. Can't stand them. And I just think
it's too messy.
Yeah. If there's anything that you feel like should be in your wheelhouse and you haven't shown up that way as a parent, you are absolutely not alone there. That wraps me up, Lozzie. I have one more thing for you today. It's a bit of a tip. We used to do tips at the end of episodes. This isn't a tips and tricks episode in and of itself. So I'm going to give it here. I've been looking at my pantry, which is slowly built up so many different fucking types of flours and rices and pastas and all of those things. It started out neat when we first moved into our house. They're in sort of buckets and it's just everywhere now. And you know those tasks that are so simple that you actually forget to do them? So for example, I was like, I'm going to order all sorts of storage jars of different sizes to store all of this stuff and make it neater. That is such a simple task that I think I forget to do those things and I remember to do more time-consuming or random tasks that seem like a bigger effort. I also think I contradict myself a bit because I'm so passionate about making sure that mums don't always do that homely type of work. I then end up not talking about this stuff at all, but really in an even partnership, mums are going to be doing housework. Like, we're not saying that mums aren't going to be doing this shit. So I am going to give one tip, And that's if you've been putting off things that are making your brain busy while you're already chaotic with motherhood and paid work, start writing a list and chip away at it. So the first item on my list is the pantry. I will actually maybe even make a reel of the mess that my pantry was, and then I will show you the final product at the end. And I will feel like a yuck homemaker after doing it. But as we know, feminism comes in a million different forms. So I'm going to embrace this side of my mothering today, or care work, or
good.
It's actually not even care work. It's bloody housework, isn't it?
I think you'd be surprised at the state of my pantry, actually, which surprises me, if I'm honest, because I love organization, but I don't organize anything in my pantry.
Oh my God, Lizzie, that's how hilarious wild. Is that? Maybe I'll inspire
Nothing's
you.
In jars or anything
I'm
like that.
I'm going to send
like
you photos at the end of today.
It's all in the pasta packets and the boxes.
You're going to love this, Lizzie. You're going to be doing this next week.
Like, and I don't think I have the willpower to put it into those plastic containers. It's too much. Like, no.
Well, these ones are glass, darling, so maybe that will change your mind.
Oh, okay. Probably not, but I love that you said that.
I will create an influencer reel and I will influence you. That is it for today, yes. My friend. Can you please sign me out?
I will, but before I do, I just quickly want to say, Luce and I both binged on the Glass podcast series. And Luce was so passionate about this. She's like, she said to me, this is the most, I had about 55 voice messages from Luce. She's like, wow. That's what she started everyone with. Wow. This is the most beautifully written podcast, et cetera, et cetera. So I want to say it was a fantastic podcast. And if you haven't already listened to it, I listened to it naturally on two speed, so I got through it really quickly. But it's so important for media personalities and influencers and people in the public eye to draw attention to women's issues, whether that be IVF, whether it be sexual harassment against female staff members at a restaurant, whether it be perimenopause, whatever it is, anything. It is so important because I'm sure it would have been a very vulnerable, and I know it is, topic for Michelle to put out there.
And she's a very well-known person now. And she talks so deeply about how she's punished her body with sort of eating disorders and stuff. Like, that is vulnerable stuff to be sharing. And the way she shares it is just beautiful.
It's so needed in society, and I just hope that this sparks more people to continue the conversation about fertility problems, journeys, issues, because the more we talk about it, the more normalized it gets. And Lou and I are here for it.
We are absolutely here
for it. We thrive. We love it. We love it. Anyway, that's just a side note. But if you have enjoyed listening to today's episode, please leave us a review and follow us on RadioNot.pod. Chat to you next week.